You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting on commercial radio stations from coast to coast, on Sirius XM all across the North American continent, on Pacifica stations across America, Europe, and Africa, on American Forces Radio and every U.S. military base in the world, and simulcast as TV on both Dish Network, DirecTV, and cable systems nationwide by the Free Speech TV Network. Welcome to our program, and Victoria Collier is on the line with us, the author of a brilliant new piece in Harper's Magazine. She's a contributor to Harper's Magazine, titled How to Rig an Election, subtitled The GOP Aims to Paint the Country Red. Victoria, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us on this day before Election Day as we go to confront these machines. I confronted an ES&S machine on Saturday here in Washington, D.C. when I early voted. And in fact, I actually had the election person come over because it was giving me weird results toward the end. I couldn't quite figure out. And you'd think that, well, in any case, first of all, why don't you share with us what your research has come up with on this how to rig an election thing?
Well, you know, the piece in Harper's, it's about 7,000 words, and I would say it grazes the surface of our problem. It's a pretty serious problem, and it's been going on for a long time. People in the election integrity movement have been sounding the alarm on these computerized voting systems that we've got for really decades, and it's gone largely unheeded. And at this point now, we've got about 98% of our votes cast and counted by these corporate-owned, privately programmed, secretly programmed voting machines that not only malfunction, as you just mentioned, pretty consistently all across the country, to the point sometimes where they just derail elections and, you know, pretty much ruin elections. But also they're open to and vulnerable to hacking and to inside manipulation, insider rigging through malicious coding in the software that is not detectable in public logic and accuracy tests, which is what's done, you know, on election day to say, look, you know, the machine works. Well, the machine may look like it works, and in fact, it still can be programmed to flip votes, to shift votes, and really the voter and the election supervisor would never have any idea at all. So it's an enormous opportunity for insider fraud that would be largely undetected. Which makes it different from, you know, fraud in the past where, you know, we may have had a lot of vote fraud in the past, but it was largely detectable if people were looking, you know, ballot box stuffing and that type of thing. This all goes on inside the black box of the computer. So that's the incredible risk of using these systems.
Yeah. I was interested that in the article you mentioned Chuck Hagel and how he had gone from being president of what became ES&S Systems to you know, running for the U.S. Senate, and the Washington Post called that election the upset election of the year, that he even carried African-American districts that had never elected a Republican. I wrote an article about that for Common Dreams back in 2002, 2003, whatever. You know, it's still on the web. It's easily Googleable. And one of the reporters for, as I recall, it was The Hill. It might have been another one of the Insider D.C. publications, picked that up and was going to run with it the next day. Called me and said that Chuck Hagel's, either his chief of staff or his attorney had called and threatened to sue them if they carried the story. They carried the story anyway, and it got out there, and then it became public knowledge that Chuck Hagel was not the investment banker that he had run as, but actually the head of a voting machine company. This is just, it's very bizarre. I mean, the long history of this. Why is this so much considered the province of the right when you look at the really proficient hacker groups out there, you know, the Anonymous, for example, they're generally considered to be on the left. If it would seem like if the entire nation's voting infrastructure was at risk from hackers, that Fox News would be hysterical that Anonymous is going to hijack tomorrow's election.
Well, Anonymous has threatened to hijack tomorrow's election, and I don't know whether they can or not. I guess if we all find out that Guy Fawkes has been elected president, we'll know that Anonymous hacked the election. But I've been saying this myself, that hacking, as opposed to rigging the machines, as opposed to, you know, the right wing is inordinately connected to the voting machine companies.
Right.
That's why it's associated with the right, because you look at the ownership, you look at the financial ownership and the key staff, and you see, you know, I would say we're looking at like 80%, 90%, you know, connection to Republican candidates, Republican causes. We've got enormous financial contributions coming from these voting machine companies to the right. So that's, of course, the huge concern, is that not only that the elections can be rigged, but that you've got one party that has their thumb potentially on the scale of the electronic voting machines. But like you say, they can also be hacked from the outside. And I think what we're really looking at potentially is like rigging wars over the United States election system.
Right.
And that is a nightmare scenario that is starting to play out in this election already. If you check the news right now, we've got reports coming in from all over the country. People are saying votes are flipping from Romney to Obama. This is a whole new set of charges that we've never seen in previous elections. And
right. Blue shift.
It's caused the Republican National Committee has sent out a letter to secretaries of states and election supervisors around the country saying, we are getting notices that votes are flipping to Obama. Therefore, we are asking that voting machine representatives be allowed to recalibrate the voting machines on Election Day.
Recalibrate?
And recalibrate.
Do you know the story of what happened to Don Siegelman in the middle of the night?
Yes, I do.
I mean, it was a recalibration, right? He went to bed as the governor of Alabama, and in one Republican precinct after all the Democratic poll watchers had left, one partisan Republican discovered 15,000 with three zeros after it. It discovered 15,000 votes on his electronic tabulator, and all of a sudden Bob Riley was governor. And when Don Siegelman tried to complain about it the next day, he was, you know, right-wing talk radio across the street went after him, and then Karl Rove went after him, and now he's in prison.
Yes, so. I know. And what does this mean, that we're going to be seeing recalibration of voting machines on Election Day by, you know, partisan-controlled voting machine companies? And at the same time, we're finding out from the Free Press, Harvey Wasserman and Bob Fitrakis in Ohio are exposing this news that ESNS and the Secretary of State in Ohio have installed uncertified patches on central tabulators in 39 counties in Ohio.
Right. We interviewed Max Cleland years ago. This happened in Atlanta. Well, you mentioned it in your article. This happened in Atlanta, too.
Yeah, exactly. So nothing, you know, we're seeing the same scenarios playing out again and again. And I guess my message to your listeners is we really need to stop waiting until the weeks before an election to deal with this problem, because you know, it's going to be the same in 2000.
Victoria, isn't the biggest meme here that we have privatized the beating heart of democracy, the vote? I mean, if you're going to privatize schools, that's a small crime against democracy. But the vote is how every other thing in democracy gets decided. It should be the last thing we privatize rather than the first.
That's how I'm putting it. You know, I think it not only it's been privatized, it's been corporatized, it's been computerized, and it's totally off limits to public control, inspection, accountability. So, you know, it does not matter what party you're affiliated with. Everybody should be absolutely concerned. And this election is shaping up to be potentially worse than 2000 in terms of contested results.
Amazing.
And there's already thousands of lawyers on the ground. And none of this would be necessary if we actually had a transparent public vote count.
Amen. We should do as Ireland did. And they sold their voting machines for scrap metal just a few months ago. Victoria Collier, brilliant new article in Harper's Magazine, How to Rig an Election. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is some genuinely brilliant reporting. You've got to read this thing. We'll be back 15 minutes past the hour here on the Tom Hartman Program.
I'm a political man.
This is one of the things that I find most fascinating. Here we are, the day before the election. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. 20 minutes past the hour. The day before the election, a week or so ago, Think Progress and several other progressive blogs and websites basically were making fun of people like Brad Friedman for suggesting that voting machines might not be secure. And here's this article by Victoria Collier in Harper's, of all places. Harper's is a very high credibility magazine, and they do fact check their writers. And, you know, how to rig an election is the headline. Something I should have mentioned to Victoria when she was on the air. When Howard Dean filled in for Tina Brown, when Tina Brown had her show Topic A with Tina Brown. In fact, we've got the audio clip of that. Shane is digging it out right now. Now, Howard Dean filled in for Tina Brown, and he had Bev Harris on. Bev Harris of blackboxvoting.org. And Bev actually brought into the studio, into the television studio, an actual Diebold vote tabulator, the machine that takes the totals from all the various precincts and says, okay, here's who won the election. And on live television, well, you can listen to it yourself. Here it is.
Bev sat me down, and in a few short seconds, I was amazed at what I could do.
All right, Bev, show me how to do this.
Go to My Computer and just click that. Go to Local Disk C. Go to GEMS, which is the name of the Diebold program. You're going to go to Local DB, which stands for Local Database. That's where they keep the votes. And by the way, this has been out on the Internet for ages now. Go to Central Tabulator Votes, which is the database we just looked at. And then go to the sum of the candidates, which is that table. You see, we have 800 votes here for you and 400 for Lex Luthor. Let's just flip those. We'll make that 400, and we'll give 100 votes to Tiger. Let's just see what happened here. We'll go back into GEMS the legitimate way. You're the county supervisor. You're checking on the progress of your election. And as you can see now, Howard Dean only has 500 votes. Lex Luthor has 900, and Tiger Woods has 100 votes. Mm. We just edited an election. It took us 90 seconds.
90 seconds on live television, they edited an election using an actual Diebold machine. Or the actual Diebold software, the GEMS software. And that was, what, 5 years ago? 6 years ago? 7 years ago? I don't know. It was a long time ago. I mean, Tina Brown doesn't even have that TV show anymore. She runs the Daily Beast and Newsweek. And, you know, and Howard Dean, you know, he saw it. He knows what's going on. But I just find the denial. The fact that the Democratic Party has known all these years about, you know, Chuck Hagel and about all this other stuff, and they're just in complete denial about it. Harvey Wasserman and Bob Fitrakis have been doing great reporting on this from day one. I was one of the early people writing about it back in the early 2000s. I've been talking about it on this program for the 9 years we've been doing this show. And the rationale, and I've actually sat down with Democratic politicians and Democratic strategists and said, why don't you talk about this? And what they say is, we are afraid that if people don't believe that the machines are safe, that they have integrity, that people won't show up to vote. Because why bother voting if the machine's going to screw up your vote? So we're not going to talk about it. And so here we are, 10 years after George Bush pushed through Congress in 2002, the Help America Vote Act, which gave billions of dollars to the states to buy machines from these private for-profit corporations who are going to tell us tomorrow who we voted for. Machines that could be hacked by anonymous on the one hand or can be secretly patched, as they are right now in Ohio. They're doing it as we speak, patching the software. Or recalibrated, because some of the machines seem to be, somebody pushed the Romney button and Obama popped up. We don't know the name of the person who did that. In fact, there have been two or three news reports on this that somebody saw this happen in Arizona. Nobody's name has been attached to it. Nobody's actually giving testimony to this. But it was such a big deal that the voting machine company came up with a patch which they're installing on the machines in Ohio to make sure it doesn't happen. And they're recalibrating machines all over the country. Entirely done by a corporation, not by your government, not by anybody accountable to you. One of the points that Victoria makes in her story, Victoria Collier, is that felons can't vote. But these voting machine companies are run by, in many cases, or their programming is done by, felons. People with multiple felony convictions. So felons can count our vote, but they can't vote. In 16, 18, 20 some odd states, whatever it is. I mean, tell me this is not insane. the greatest of our commons is our government. Our government administers the commons. There's the reason why we started this country. In fact, it's laid out quite specifically, we the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, to establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, to ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States. All of those things are the commons. It doesn't say we did it so that Mitt Romney could become a multimillionaire. We did it to ensure domestic tranquility, to provide for the general welfare, you know, the commons. So the government controls the commons, and it does it at our behest. It does it. The government does it the way that we tell it to, by virtue of our electing people who tell us, this is how I will administer the commons. So the mechanism by which our government is run is the vote. If the most important of all the commons is the government, then the mechanism of control of that government is the vote. And the vote has now been privatized. It is in the hands of private for-profit corporations that are by and large affiliated with Republicans. But even if they weren't, won't tell us who we voted for or how we voted. By the way, I voted on Saturday. I hope you did too. Here's the bottom line. And Victoria Collier makes this point in her article. If they're going to steal 5 million votes, we need to turn out 8 million. There's a fair amount of evidence that Barack Obama in 2008 won an historic landslide that was diminished by these machines being rigged.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And now, you know, as soon as the Republicans hear about a problem, oh, we got to fix that. Get the voting machine companies in there. Democrats, crickets.
Let's get the faith so all can succeed. Every man, woman, and show, every nation and sea.
Welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you, helping you win the water cooler wars. By the way, we're going to be giving away a copy of Cracking the Code, my book on the theoretical basis of the book is the subtitle, How to Win Hearts, Change Minds, and Restore America's Original Vision. It's a book on political messaging. But it's also a book in which I lay out the foundational thinking of the conservative and liberal mind views, world views. And I think it's frankly one of the better books I've written. It's been out for a couple of years. We're going to give away a copy today, when Shano gets a tingle up his leg as a caller is saying something. And he says, that's the one who won. And I will put that person on hold, and Louise will take their address, and off to the races we go. So, what'd she say? Can we all have tingles? Yes. Okay. Louise wants a tingle, too. All righty. The only rigging voting machines is one form of voter theft. Another one, and I would say this is the really big one right now, and I'll tell this as a personal story, right, to establish the frame for this. I have been voting since, as I recall, the election of 72. Now, I might have voted before that. I don't frankly remember. I know that, you know, around in the late 60s, they made it legal for 18-year-olds to vote. And I think that, you know, I was eligible to vote. I just have no recollection of my first vote other than the election of 72. And I remember that one because Richard Nixon was running, and I was very enthusiastic about voting against Mr. Nixon. And as I recall, he was running against Mr. McGovern, was he not? Yes. And so I voted for George McGovern. During the years since then, now at that time I lived in Lansing. Actually, I lived in Okemos, Michigan, which is an upscale white suburb of Lansing, Michigan. From there, from Okemos, we moved to New Hampshire, which is a largely all-white state and a fairly rural state. I voted there. Let me get this timeline straight. From Lansing, Louise and I then in 78 moved, and, you know, I voted several times. Never had to wait more than 10 minutes to vote in Okemos, Michigan. Never had to wait more than 10 minutes to vote. In fact, very often I'd walk in and there'd be, you know, they'd be waiting for you. Then in 78, Louise and I moved down to Atlanta, Georgia. In 78, we moved up to New Hampshire. That's right. And we started the Community for Abused Kids in Plymouth, in Romney, New Hampshire. And I voted in Plymouth. Or perhaps it was Romney. It's been a while. In any case, I remember, you know, in New Hampshire, voting was no big deal, right? I mean, you walk in, you vote, you leave. From New Hampshire, we moved to Atlanta. We started a travel agency in Atlanta. We didn't live in the urban part of Atlanta, though. We lived in what, at that time, in 83, when we moved to Atlanta, was a little town north of Atlanta. First, we lived in Sandy Springs and then on Lock Highland in a community that was just outside north of that. It was what used to be horse country. I mean, it's all now contiguous with the city, but, you know, it was this very upscale white bread suburb. We lived in a little lake, you know. We were doing well. And so as a white guy living in a white neighborhood that was a relatively affluent neighborhood, Louise and I voted repeatedly, never had to wait more than 5 or 10 minutes. That was our experience in Atlanta, the 13 to 15 years that we lived in Atlanta. I'd have to go back and check the year by year. From Atlanta, we moved to Germany, where we lived for a year, and discovered that when they, I did not vote in Germany, obviously, but we discovered that when they hold elections in Germany, they vote on paper. They call the elections election night, and they do it based on exit polling, because it takes 2 or 3 days to actually count all the ballots. So the official decision is known in 2 or 3 days, but they've never been off by more than a tenth of a percent or so. And most of the countries of the world do it this way. We used to do it this way here in the United States up until the Bush family got into politics in a big way. And then all of a sudden, the results of the exit polls started being different from the results of the electronic voting machines that were brought into place in the 90s. And then in 2002, they went everywhere because of the Help America Vote Act pushed through by George W. Bush. But I digress. So from Atlanta, we moved up to Vermont. We owned a travel agency in Atlanta. Then we moved to Germany. We came back to Atlanta. We started an ad agency. We ran that until 1997. We sold that advertising agency to our employees, actually, 7-year buyout. And so with a 7-year income stream, we said, okay, that's it. Let's retire to Vermont and write books. And we did. And in Vermont, I voted, and I don't remember ever waiting even more than 5 minutes to vote in Vermont. And from Vermont, from Vermont, we moved to Portland, Oregon, another affluent white community. And in Portland, Oregon, we had vote by mail. I never waited even a minute to vote. My ballot came in the mail. Louise and I would sit down with Willamette Week, the local weekly newspaper that always had a great voter's guide along with the voter guide that the state provided. And we'd go through and we'd fill out our ballot and say, okay, this is it. Drop it in the mail. Boom. Never had to wait. And then from Portland, Oregon, 2 years ago, we moved here to Washington, D.C. And I voted in Washington, D.C. on Saturday, and the wait was not bad. I timed it. It was about 30 minutes, 32 minutes. I was in we're living in the city, down in the Southwest, in an area that's very mixed. I'd say it's probably maybe 60% African-American, 40% Caucasian or thereabouts. It's hard to say. It depends on where you go, you know. But that was about the mix in the polling place. Everybody was very nice. The lines were not terribly long. But it was the first time that I've actually stood in a line for more than 10 minutes in my life. And most importantly, it was not a swing state. And this is where I'm going with this. I would predict that if Washington, D.C., which is arguably not even a state, but if it was a swing state, if I was voting in a heavily Democratic, because this was a heavily Democratic area. I mean, there's a lot of renovation going on down on the waterfront. A lot of the white folks who live down there are kind of gentrifying in. Louise and I live in the Marina. It's a fairly affluent area. And the African-Americans who live there are, by and large, Democratic voters as well. So I'm guessing 80, 90% of the people who voted in that precinct where I voted were Democratic. But it wasn't a swing state. It doesn't matter. Right? Everybody knows that's going to go for Obama. But had we been in one of those counties in Virginia that is heavily Democratic, or one of those counties in Ohio that's heavily Democratic, or one of those counties in Colorado that's heavily Democratic, I'll bet I would have had to wait in line 3 hours, or 4 hours, or 5 hours, or 6 hours. Now, how can you call that anything other than voter suppression? I mean, just standing in line for an hour is an obscenity, in my opinion. So, I mean, I'm astounded that the corporate media, that the mainstream media is reporting these long lines of polling places as if they're some sort of wonderful thing. They're an indication of large turnout. No, they're not a wonderful thing. They're an indication of voter suppression. There should be more polling places. There should be more voting machines. As much as I am wary of the machines, it's what we've got right now. So there should be more of them. Nobody should, you know, this is why we need a federal right to vote. Nobody should ever have to wait more than 10 minutes to vote. In fact, it should be the law. And, you know, if we can put a friggin' man on the moon, we can figure out how to let people vote within 10 minutes. I'm serious. This is not a technological, something that's beyond our capability, or a political thing that's beyond our capability. Oh, but we can't afford to have more voting machines in that largely African-American neighborhood. We just don't have the money. Or these poor neighborhoods, or these working-class, heavily unionized neighborhoods, regardless of their racial makeup, who vote heavily Democratic. Or these student, you know, these campus neighborhoods. We can't, you know, Secretary of State for Ohio, Mr. Husted, says, or the local Republican election. We just can't afford to have enough machines there or enough poll workers. I'm telling you, this is a thoroughly corrupted system. From machines run by Republican felons to Republicans who should be felons, like Husted, making it, and Rick Scott down in Florida, excuse me, making it harder and harder and harder for people to vote, particularly in Democratic areas. This is a crime against democracy. Where's the outrage? Where is the reporting? 45 minutes past.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We'll be back in just a minute, check in with you and check on some of your stories, your experiences voting, and thoughts on these issues. Take it back to mainstream media, 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Tom Hartman here with you. Actually, it's four hours a day, 5 days a week. We do it on our TV at night, too. And tonight I'm going to be hosting, moderating the third-party debate between Jill Stein and Gary Johnson, which will be carried on Free Speech TV and RT and cable systems and Dish Network and DirecTV and whatnot all over the world. Christopher in Chicago. Hey, Christopher, what's up?
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I am great, but I'll get better. How about you, Christopher?
I'm good. I'm good. I read your book, Screw. That's a great book. Right now, too. I voted last week, and I was in line about two and a half hours. I live here in Chicago. We did early voting. But to see people out talking and just getting their opinions, I don't see the gap, the enthusiasm gap that the mainstream media is reporting.
Right.
A lot of people out there for the president, maybe because I live in his hometown, but it's I'm hopeful. I'm still hopeful.
Yeah, me too. I don't see any enthusiasm gap either. I think that Obama won by a much larger margin than was reported in the last election. And I think he's going to win by a very large margin in this election, although it may end up that Mitt Romney's our president, because we've got such an insecure and unstable both election system, tabulating system. I mean, this is what happened to Don Siegelman down in Alabama. And I can give you a list, actually. So we will see, Christopher. We will see. You know, if they're going to steal 5 million, we got to turn out 8 million. We got to get more. Everybody has to go out and vote. It's so important that you get out and vote. Joanne in Playa del Rey, California. Hey, Joanne, what's up?
Hi there. I am just appalled that the money is going into putting polling places. Why didn't they postpone the presidential election? The news coverage on Long Island is pathetic. There is no news coming in about Baldwin, Oceanside, Long Beach, all of these areas, and it's amazing. This is my hometown, Baldwin, Long Island,
yeah.
And it's amazing that generators and millions of dollars are being pumped into polling, but people have no homes. They have no gas.
Are you saying that they are out there polling people who literally don't have, they've lost everything and they can't even vote?
No, I'm hearing from back east that they're setting up polling places, but maybe one polling place where there used to be maybe five or six.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think, Joanne, they are genuinely doing their best. This was a disaster. It's not this, the stuff that I'm, thank you for the call. The stuff that I'm concerned about is not the a hurricane hit. It's the, hey, John Husted hit. It is the Rick Scott hit. It is the Republicans who run the elections. I mean, you would think that you would have impartial people running the elections, but no, the Secretary of State in Ohio, the Secretary of State in Florida, they're both Republicans, they're both partisans, and they're running the elections. So Catherine Harris knocked 60,000 African-Americans off the voting rolls before the election of 2000 so that George W. Bush could get close enough, within spitting distance, that the Supreme Court could help him steal the election. Jerry in Amityville, New York. Hey, Jerry, what's up?
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, on this whole issue of the voting machines, but first let me say that I do think it's important who counts the votes, and I do think that you point to a very important problem, first of all, with respect to the Secretary of State's being partisan. But on the issue of the problems with the voting machines, it's even worse than people think, because there's problems even with these new optical scanner voting machines that do have a paper trail, and which that I thought were better until recently, but it turns out that they're recording a lot of overvotes. And my brother lives down in Florida. He was even playing me a broadcast that was done by the CBS News affiliate out of Miami on how in Miami-Dade County there was some kind of recent election where 43% of the votes in the voting machine was thrown out due to overvotes, and it was later determined that the overvotes were not due to problems and errors of the voters, but they were due to machine errors.
Hmm.
So we have problems even with these new optical scanners.
Right.
Then we have in New Jersey, we have Chris Christie. I think he's taking advantage of the situation to push the envelope. He's permitting voting by email on personal computers for some people. He's saying people that are homeless due to the hurricane. But if they're homeless due to the hurricane, does it stand to reason they may not have computers? Maybe even their laptop was lost in the...
Well, they might be able to get to a public library or something. Again, I'm not going to second guess people who are trying to deal with the tragedy of the hurricane, Jerry. But, I'm with you on the optical scan machines. Again, if these machines were owned by the government, if they were programmed with open source software so that everybody could see it, if they produced a very clear and visible paper trail, if there were random, comparisons, recounts done with them. I mean, you know, it's not rocket science to come up with a technology that actually is trustworthy and can be used. You and I use them all the time when we bank. But to have technology like this that is insecure, this is insane. Paul in Woodinville, Washington, listening to Talk 1090. Hey, Paul, what's up?
Hey, Tom. To me, I've always thought this. Has it ever occurred to anybody that these voting machines is the lowest functional use of a computer. I mean, it's a counting machine.
Right.
Computers do, so this software is just, you know, and so in other words, to rig the vote or mess with it is no more complicated than to slide the beads of an abacus from one side to the other.
Yeah, or change the GUI, change the interface so that if you touch one part of the screen, it registers something which is different than what the letters underneath it say. People don't realize that it's not an absolute technological thing like a switch that's got a name on it and that switch is hardwired. It's softwired. It's software. Excellent point, Paul. Thank you for calling and making it. Katie in St. Charles, Illinois, listening on AM 820 WCPT. Hey, Katie, what's up?
Hey, I just, you know, I'm a big fan, first of all. Second of all, I'm pretty surprised about the defensiveness when we do call for more transparency. Like you were saying, we get called conspiracy theorists, and especially it's very interesting that you brought up Howard Dean earlier and everything. That, I mean, that was a real grassroots, you know, movement, and they made him look like a crazy person.
And frankly, I think that they made him look like a crazy person because he was the progressive. I think Howard Dean could have easily beat George W. Bush. But he did on network television say he wanted to break up the big networks. That was the end of his campaign.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
So we've been talking about voting machines. We've been talking about voter suppression. We've been talking about my experience of having lived on this earth for 6 decades and never having had to wait more than 10 or 15 minutes in my entire life to vote because it has always been, you know, I've never lived in a swing state. And I've never lived in a heavily Democratic part of a swing state. I've lived in heavily Democratic areas, but not heavily Democratic parts of swing states. But there's all kinds of dimensions to this stuff, and there is nobody on earth who knows more about it or does a better job on reporting it than Brad Friedman. Bradblog.org. It's Bradblog.com, is it not, Brad?
Bradblog.com. No promises what you'll get if you go to Bradblog.org.
Yeah, thank you very much. I have a typo here on my one sheet. Bradblog.com. The founder and publisher of the Brad Blog, Brad Friedman. Brad, welcome back to the program.
Hey, thank you, Tom. Great to be here. Appreciate it.
I was mentioning earlier that I think Progress had been throwing you in the category of conspiracy folks who think 9/11 was an inside job or whatever. And which is not to diminish those folks, but rather to say, no, wait a minute, this isn't even debatable. What's going on? Give us an update.
Well, you know, and I've been listening to your show earlier in the hour. You've been doing a great job, some righteous rants on what is really the crux of this issue, which is the private ownership of our once public election. And, you know, we're going to be paying the price for that yet again this year, as there are going to be questions about the results. We're saying, I know you talked a little bit about it in the first hour, but incredibly, this secret software patch, the secret uncertified software patch that has been applied in 39 Ohio counties at the last minute is absolutely mind-blowing. I cover it today at bradblog.com. We've got the actual contract between the Secretary of State of Ohio and ESNS. John Husted and ESNS, the world's largest voting machine company. This is no conspiracy theory. This is a legitimate, very serious concern when you're installing software on 39 counties at the very last minute. This contract was signed September 19, 2002, Tom. So, you know, they're just putting this stuff on these computers at the very last second.
Wait a minute, 10 years ago this contract was signed?
No, 2012.
2012, okay.
2012, yeah. It was signed less than 2 months ago.
Right.
Less than 2 months ago before the largest presidential election in the the swingiest of swing states. Now, does this mean there's a conspiracy to rig the election in Ohio? Well, We don't know. But we also don't know why they're installing software on 39 different central tabulators. We're talking about the main database for the voting system in 39 counties, among them some of the largest, Franklin County, Cuyahoga County, Cleveland.
These are heavily Democratic and heavily African-American communities. Are they applying these software patches in the rural white Republican counties in Ohio?
In theory, and that's the problem, we don't know. We can't oversee what's going on. In theory, ESNS voting systems or tabulation systems are on 39 different counties. Mm. Now, the contract is for all of the ESNS counties, as opposed to the Diebold or the Hardin or Civic counties, different voting machine companies.
Right.
So, in theory, it's all 39 of those counties, and nobody really knows what this software does because nobody was allowed to test it. They did this entire thing in secret just days before the election. This is absolutely mind-blowing to me that they think that this is okay no matter what this software does, whether it works correctly or not. We don't know. We can't know. And for somebody to regard this stuff as conspiracy theory is insane. And I would put that on the equivalence of climate change deniers out there, folks who deny the science. We're talking about science here.
Right.
Shouldn't everybody give a damn about this, Tom?
Well, yes. And I'm strongly of the opinion, if you're going to use machines, let the public own the machines, let them be programmed in an open source fashion, and let's make sure, for goodness sake, that there is an absolute paper trail that is audited regularly and verified. But even then, I don't trust the damn machines. There's a reason why Ireland is selling their machines as we speak for scrap metal. Now, there's a reason why ESNS is the world's largest voting machine company, because nobody else in the world is buying the damn things. So, of course, it's an American company. Otherwise, it would be a Chinese company if everybody else in the world was buying them.
Exactly. End of rant. Remember, you can't, even if it's owned by the public and it's open source software, you still can't see how those ballots are counted inside the computer. There's
That's
no
right.
way really to know. If the software that you checked on Monday is the same software that's used on Election Day on Tuesday,
right.
We need a fully 100% transparent process, Tom. And the only way that I have found that we can do that is with hand-counted paper ballots at the precinct on election night, fully public in front of all parties, all video cameras with the results posted right there before
yep.
ballots move anywhere.
And all
we have
take,
a disgraceful – We have a disgraceful system right now, from top to bottom, from the 6-hour lines you're seeing to vote at all in Florida and Ohio, to the secret software that's used to count our votes. So when the results are announced tomorrow, they'll either be right or they won't be. We, the people, will have absolutely no way of knowing either way.
Yeah, and all the more the tragedy. Tell us what Redshift is.
Redshift is the statisticians have looked at the exit polls that come out during Election Day, and they compare those exit polls to the actual results that come off of these voting systems. And the folks who support this idea of Redshift think that Democrats consistently get screwed by these voting systems. Now, again, either they do or they don't. We look at these statistical studies. They're sometimes convincing. But, again, it's guesswork. And we should not be running a democracy by guesswork.
Yeah, I mean,
we should be running it, being able to oversee it by the people so that everyone, no matter what party you're with, has confidence in the results.
Yeah.
I would suggest that lack of confidence is as dangerous as anything else.
When my mom was an election worker in the 1950s and 60s in Lansing, Michigan, there was no Redshift. They were doing exit polls. They were calling elections based on those exit polls. And she and all the other volunteer, it was mostly women at that time. I remember a table full of ladies and, middle-aged ladies. I was a little kid, And they would stay late at night to count the vote and finally call in the local. And this was just for a small neighborhood. But there were lots and lots and lots of people involved. Now we've got fewer people involved. We've got these machines in place. This is, for the cost of of 1 or 2 days in the Iraq, in George Bush's Iraq war, we could go back to having people do this, or volunteers for that matter.
We could save a lot of money if we had people do this rather than this exorbitant voting machine cost. These maintenance contracts are just absolutely insane. And, you know, the fact that Democrats let me just hit them for a moment. The fact that they are not out there on the front lines raising absolute holy hell about this stuff is to their eternal shame. It's, of course, worse the fact that they, you know, turn around and say that folks like me are conspiracy theorists, or that any of this depresses turnout. I have seen no evidence that discussion of this depresses turnout, and frankly, I have seen exactly the opposite.
Right.
When people hear about this stuff, they get fired up, they want to take action, and they want to fight to make sure that their vote gets counted and counted accurately.
There you go. There you go. Brad Friedman, founder and publisher of the Brad Blog. Bradblog.com is the website. You can read all about it. There's so much more. We're going to be covering a lot of this as we continue on through the program, so stick around. Brad, thanks for the great work you're doing.
Thanks, Tom. Buckle up.
You betcha, buddy. We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So, have you voted yet? What was your experience? We'll be back.
Security. I've been in the wrong place, but it must have been the right time.
Yeah, well, you know, depends on where you're voting, I guess. This is the thing. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, occupying the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. And Dr. Mike Newcomb is on the line with us. He's the host of the Mike Newcomb Show on KPHX in Phoenix, Arizona. His website, MikeNewcomb.net. He's a regular fill-in for this program. Most of you are probably familiar with him. And, Mike, welcome back to the program.
Hey, Tom. How are you doing?
I am great, but I'll get better. I hope the same is true of you as well.
All's well.
Good. I understand that in the great state of Arizona, you have an actual candidate for United States Senate. Do I have this right, Jeff Flake?
Correct. Congressman Flake.
This and he's running for the second highest office in the land, you know, U.S. Senator. I mean, these are among the most powerful people on earth. And this guy, well, let me let you tell the story. Go for it.
Yeah, I mean, basically, what's happened here, Tom? Two things actually. Congressman Flake and the Republican Party sent out one of these robocalls. You know, this automated voice, which basically is intended to help people get out the vote, give them information, provide them with the appropriate data that they need to exercise their constitutional right to vote. However, what ended up happening was there were many Democrats who got this robocall, and what the robocall did was gave them the wrong precinct for where they were supposed to go and vote on November 6th. So several people actually contacted the local news affiliate here, and they did an investigation and ran a piece out here, and clearly the woman kept the recording. I actually had several people who kept the recording and showed that they were given misinformation. They were given precincts 11 miles away from where they live, 5 miles away from where they live. So that this, you know, they're saying, oh, it was a mistake. But in reality, you know, this is not the first time this has happened. Now, we've had several other incidences. I'm not sure if you've heard about it, but through Maricopa County, which is our major county here, the biggest county in Arizona, the elections department, they sent out voter registration form in Spanish. However, what they did on that voter registration form is they listed the date of November 8th as the general election date, and we all know that it's November 6th. So
right.
There was multiple things that went out in Spanish for voter registration forms with the wrong date. But then after that, Maricopa County Recorder, Helen Purcell, you would think she would have gotten her act together, but instead a second incident occurred, again, in Spanish. They had these bookmarks, which I guess they were trying to promote, you know, election awareness and get out there and vote, et cetera. But it also had the same date, too, November 8th, not November 6th. So we've had three instances now where it appears to be that Spanish-speaking voters were given the wrong the wrong election date, and then Congressman Flake and his team put out a purposeful sabotage of this election, telling Democratic voters to go to the wrong precinct.
Right. And if you go to the wrong precinct, what happens, Dr. Mike Newcomb?
Well, I mean, if you go to the wrong precinct, they'll redirect you ultimately to the right precinct. But again, that's putting a major onus on the voter, because now they have to go and go to the other precinct. They have to get back in line and have to wait, you know, and
right.
it just, it's another barrier to implement so that the people who are going to vote or at least statistically tend to vote Democratic are, being suppressed. The vote is being suppressed.
So this sitting United States congressman who took an oath to uphold the Constitution, to uphold and defend the Constitution from all enemies, domestic and foreign, this sitting U.S. congressman has somebody on his staff who is committing a felony against democracy, if not an actual legal felony, certainly a moral felony against democracy. And he is saying what?
He's not saying anything. I mean, they all claim, they all deny any culpability. They deny any involvement.
I know nothing about those people out there committing crimes in my name.
What's amazing is, Tom, and we've talked about this. I mean, here you have a Republican Party conservative movement who says, you know, this clarion call that, hey, we are the fierce defenders of your liberties, of your freedoms, of your constitutional rights. But every step along the way, whether it's here in Arizona or anywhere else across the country, it's quite the opposite. They're doing everything within their power to deny constitutional rights to people who happen to ideologically disagree with them. Look, you remember Senate Bill 1070 out here, Tom.
Oh, yeah.
If you happen to be of a different color skin, it gave the police officers the opportunity to target you and basically ask for your papers and see if you're an American citizen here. Now, fortunately, the courts overruled the main provisions in that particular law, but it never stops.
Is there we're talking with Dr. Mike Newcomb, host of the Mike Newcomb Show on KPHX, our affiliate in Phoenix, and also a regular fill-in host for this program. MikeNewcomb.net is his website. There's links to it from TomHartmann.com as well. Is there anybody in Arizona, Mike, who is talking about criminally investigating this?
There are people who are looking into it. This one gentleman, Randy Peraz. He is the head of an organization out here who was actually, he was very instrumental, as many people were, in getting Senator Russell Pierce recalled. And then Russell Pierce not only lost the recall election, he lost his second bid to come back. He was a sitting Senate president, the only sitting Senate president at state level in the history of the United States who was ever recalled and then lost the recall election. So there's a group out here that's being led by Randy Peraz, president. He's a president of Citizens for a Better Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
So they are on top of this. They're on top of Sheriff Joe Arpaio, who I'm sure you're familiar with,
yeah.
America's most corrupt sheriff. So people are very, very angry and upset. But the reason this has happened in particular with Flake's race, Tom, just so you know and the listeners know, is that we have an incredible candidate in Rich Carmona here in Arizona. Mm.
Right.
And Rich Carmona, as you know, was the former Surgeon General under Bush. He was an independent but came on board with the Democratic Party. And right now, based off of polls released here in Arizona, he's not only is he competitive in multiple polls, he actually was shown to have a marginal lead. So they're getting very, very worried right now that Rich Carmona might be the next senator, Democratic senator from the state of Arizona. And I think that's why you're seeing these type of just unconscionable tactics right
yeah.
now.
Unconscionable to criminal, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would agree with you.
Okay, Dr. Mike Newcomb, host of the Mike Newcomb Show on KPHX. Mike Newcomb, that's newcomb.net is the website. And Dr. Mike, thanks a lot for dropping by today.
All right, Tom, thanks a lot. You sound great.
Thank you. Always great to hear from you. We will be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
So what have your experiences been so far voting, trying to vote, involving yourself with our electoral process? Do you live in a swing state? Are you having problems? Welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you. And Sarah in Everett, Washington. Hey, Sarah, what's on your mind today?
Well, right before I turned the radio on, I got in my car and looked at my email, and there was an email to call the Secretary of State's office in Ohio about this software.
Huh.
So I did. I called about that, and I wanted to voice my opinion about the directive that he put out on Friday about
right.
voters having to fill out their own, you know, what form of ID they're using.
Right.
Which is illegal. So I talked to the lady, and she said their phones are exploding, and they haven't stopped answering them, and that this is a serious issue. And she was actually, she sounded a little upset herself. So
yeah.
she said from both sides, it's been equal Republicans and Democrats really freaking out about the software.
Right.
And about the directive.
Well, and the people who answer the phones at the Secretary of State's office, they probably, you know, it's probably a civil servant who's been there for 10 or 15 years. They,
yeah.
She's got no partisan, you know, saw to grind or whatever, the axe to grind.
She started talking about Florida. She started talking about, like, I mean, she had her own issues she wanted to talk to me about, too.
That's great.
So she was like, I live in Florida, and maybe, you know, maybe the solution was worse than the problem in the first place. And
yes.
Anyway,
right.
she kind of made me feel better, but I guess there's a lot of people calling because an email went out. I
yeah.
don't know if you saw that there was an email blast.
I did not see that, but that makes perfect sense to call the Secretary of State's office in Ohio and just say, what the hell are you people thinking?
I
have a question for you.
Oh.
I have a question for you, sir.
Well, she did explain one thing I didn't want to forget to tell
you. Go for it.
She said the software actually isn't software that sends the votes directly to the Secretary of State's office. It's after the final count, it's
mm-hmm.
from the Board of Elections, and they send the final count to the Secretary of State after it's been counted, is what she explained to
right,
me.
Right, but
she
the software is not from the Board of Elections, because the Board of Elections doesn't do software. It's from the private for-profit company.
Right, so what can they do in between? Exactly. Which
right.
they did before when there was Tennessee, there were computers receiving the count in 2004.
Right, for Ohio. Yes, Ohio's
yeah,
vote
and was
tabulated.
Yeah, the Carlisle Group.
Yes, exactly. And it was also the same company that had the 5 million emails for, you know, that Karl Rove and all these guys in the White House were doing on the GeorgeBush.com website or whatever it was. And that vanished when Congress subpoenaed them. They just vanished into thin air. Shane tells me,
yeah,
Sarah, that you are the winner of a copy of Cracking the Code, How to Win Hearts, Change Minds, and Restore America's Original Vision.
How did I do that?
Well, I don't know. You made his leg tingle or something.
It's
in just a second.
In Everett.
I'm going to put now Shane's all horribly embarrassed. I'm going to put you on hold. And but first, I have a question for you, Sarah. You live
yes.
in Washington State. I saw this article in the Seattle Times. On their website, winner of the 2012 Pulitzer Prize, Seattle Times, no slouch newspaper. And the article by Sandy Doten and Brian Rosenthal, Seattle Times staff reporters, says, and I quote, the GOP Victory Van Program announced last week includes 9 vans where voters can submit their ballots. The volunteers and paid employees from the Republican Party organizations of King County and Washington State have also been knocking on the doors of likely Republican voters who haven't cast their ballots yet. They're driving these vans around saying to people, hey, give us your ballots. We'll deliver them.
Idea.
Do you know about this?
No, I had no idea. We have, like, the ballot boxes outside of the courthouse.
Right.
We have all mail-in ballots. It's so easy to slip it in. I would never, ever hand mine to someone in the van. That's like kidnapping your vote.
Yeah, well,
this is what
King County Executive Dow Constantine says. Don't hand your ballot over to someone you don't know. The article goes on to say, Republicans say they're baffled by the response.
Why? It's so sick and weird. And I don't understand why more people aren't, like, why aren't more people fighting for just logical justice? It
mm-hmm.
makes so much sense.
Yeah.
Why in the hell are so many people just...
In part because
the
Supreme Court ruled in 2000 that you and I do not have a constitutional right to vote. And because there is not an affirmative constitutional right to vote,
mm-hmm.
the Justice Department does not have the power to use the kind of enforcement mechanisms that they might otherwise be able to use to put
right.
people who mess with elections in jail. So anyhow, Sarah, I'm going to put you on hold. So
thank you.
Okay, hang on just a second. Louise is going to get your information. We'll get a book to you. Diane, I don't see a city for you. Where are you calling from?
Seattle.
Oh, okay. Another one from Washington. Did you know about these the GOP
yes,
victory vans?
Yes, I did. And that's exact. I was calling in regarding that. Yes. It's all over the airways. 1090 has been doing a great job of exposing all of this kind of activity where people are going around trying to collect ballots. So that was one thing I wanted to talk about, but you already talked about it. The other thing I wanted to mention is Obviously, Washington is a mail-in ballot state now, like right. you mentioned about Portland a little while ago. Mm-hmm. And it's very convenient to be able to do that. And I would think, I mean, nobody's talked about fraud or lessening fraud with that way of voting, mm-hmm. but to be able to get your ballot in advance and not have to, you know, request an absentee ballot and actually just mail it in, I would think that that would eliminate fraud, but I haven't heard any of.
I liked it a lot when I lived there. Here's the flip side of it, and this happened in the UK. I don't know that this has happened anywhere in the United States, but in the UK they also have a vote by mail system, and I don't know if it's a primary system or a secondary system. You know, in most states in the United States, it's a secondary system. You can ask for an absentee ballot and vote by mail.
Right.
But in any case, there was a neighborhood in London where a guy got busted for going door to door and telling people that when their ballots arrived in the mail, he would buy them for £5 or £10, you know, for $5 or $10. And he collected apparently several hundred ballots. And then, of course, he would ask the people to sign everything, you know, to sign the ballot and sign the envelope. So they were all ready to mail. And then he would fill them out. And he was paying people to do that. So there is an opportunity for fraud with mail-in ballots. But similarly, you know, there's an opportunity to walk into any 7-Eleven or any store anywhere in America, grab something, stick it in your pocket, and walk out. The fact of the matter is the vast majority of people never, ever do that. And they don't do that because if you do that, you go to jail because there are penalties for this, you know. And so I think that, you know, if we simply made the penalties for that kind of voter fraud rather severe, that, you know, that's going to reduce it dramatically. And in fact, the British, if my recollection is right, this story was a couple of years old, responded to that incident of voter fraud or election fraud or whatever you want to call it, by tightening up their voter laws. But that's the only way that I know of that plus the fact that actually in Oregon, I'm guessing in Washington State as well, the ballots are then fed through these optical scan machines from ESNS or Diebold or whatever, and that feed tabulator computers. And again, it's private corporations that are counting those mailed-in ballots. And that's what I would get out of the loop, is I would say, okay, you know, let's replace these with if you're going to have optical scan computers that are basically just counters, like, you know, the ones that they use to score tests in school, have them be owned by the local government, have them be programmed with open-source software, have the entire thing be totally transparent, and have it be verified by actual human beings who are watching and doing random checks. So, anyhow, Diane, thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it. Janet in Federal Way, Washington. Boy, we're getting a lot of callers from Washington State. It must be a hot topic there. Janet, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Those Republicans, they are knocking on doors here in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
They're all over the place. They knocked on my door. And what makes me mad is, yeah, they knock on the door, and the Seattle police, I mean, Seattle News, have reported it, but they're not reporting the fraud part.
Well, there's no proof of the fraud part.
It's like they're encouraging us to give our ballots to these people.
Well, here's what the Republicans are saying, and I think it's important to tell both sides of the story. What the Republicans are saying is that back when we had polling places, what we used to do is we'd send vans out and we would go to people's houses and say, hey, do you need a ride to the polling place? We'll take you there right now. And people would hop in the van, they'd drive them to the polling place, people that they knew were reliable Republican voters. And they would take them, and those people would vote Republican. And the science of who votes for whom is pretty tight these days. They pretty much know when they knock on your door whether you're going to vote Democratic or Republican. And, I mean, right down to the who you are as opposed to what neighborhood you live in. And so, what they're saying is this is just, you know, the vote-by-mail version of that. Instead of dropping by your door and offering to take you to the polling place, they'll drop by your door and offer to take your ballot to the polling place. But the question that is being raised by the Democrats is, okay, if you do that at Republican households, registered Republicans, we would have not that much of a big problem with it, because that's, like you say, it's a variation on taking people to the polling place. But when you knock on the door of registered Democrats and tell them that you will take their ballots to the polling place, we're suspicious. So are you a registered Democrat? I'm curious.
No, I'm an independent.
Okay, so as an independent, this might have been, you know, an innocent thing. It might be part of the Republican get out the vote effort. There might be nothing wrong here. There might be nothing criminal. There might not be any fraud. Or it might be a dastardly deed. We don't know.
You're saying that, but the news isn't saying that. You're saying it could be legit and it could not be legit.
Right.
The news portrayed it to be totally legit. Go ahead and give up your ballot.
Oh, my.
I don't think that's very good advice.
Well, I would quote again from the Seattle Times. While not illegal, the offer to deliver ballots inflamed Democrats and caused some residents to raise concern with King County Elections Director Cheryl Huff. On Sunday, King County Executive Dow Constantine, a Democrat, joined Huff at a Seattle news conference urging residents to safeguard their franchise. We are strongly advising citizens, Constantine said, if they want to make sure their ballot is counted, don't hand your ballot over to someone you don't know. So there you go, Janet. At least the Seattle Times is on. Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
It's going to get wild in the next 24 hours, the next 36 hours, the next 48 hours. Who knows? Maybe it'll be a month before we figure out what happened in Ohio.
I read the news today, oh boy, about a lucky man who made the grade. And though the news was rather sad,
welcome back. Tom Harbin here with you. Let's check in on the news. This Talk Radio News Service report brought to you by the efforts to free America's newest political prisoner, former Alabama Governor Don Siegelman. You can sign the petition asking President Obama to pardon Don Siegelman at free-don.org. And all that said, Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service on the line with us. Hey, Ellen, what's up?
Well, as you know, tomorrow is the election, and Mitt Romney has decided to go to Ohio, to my hometown of Cleveland, and also to Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. This is going to kind of mess up things to get out the vote, but obviously he felt he had to seal the deal. And there is definitely some polling that is showing outside of Cleveland, Ohio, is actually sort of a bellwether area, and if he can pull in some votes in Cleveland, he could do better in Ohio.
Very, very interesting. Ellen, do you mind if I mention the letter that your family members wrote?
Go right ahead.
Okay. I saw this thing on the internet that you and a number of your other family members, you come from a fairly prominent family in Ohio, the Ratners, and the guy who's running against Sherrod Brown, Josh Mandel is his name?
That's right.
Right. Is your cousin by marriage, and he is trashing gays. And in this open letter that a whole bunch of your family members wrote to your cousin,
I didn't write it. My immediate family did.
Yeah. Okay. Your immediate family did. They point out that you know you are married to a woman, Sholene Espinosa, who was served a distinguished military career, the first or second female U-2 pilot. You know. How dare you Josh you know trash the rights of your cousin to have to be married and to you know I'm sure you can say it better than me.
Well, it was interesting. He was asked during the debate what he thought about gays in the military, and although he didn't say he would repeal it, he basically said he disagreed with it. You know, first of all, it's the law of the land, Tom.
Yeah.
And there has not been one problem with it. So if he wanted to be political about it, he wasn't even smart about it, he would have said, you know, it is the law of the land, and it seems to be working, period.
Yeah.
And on gays and gay marriage, all he would have to do is say, look, I may have some personal problems because of religious or whatever he wants to say, but then he could also say, I will respect the rights of gay people. He went on to talk about the rights of other people, but he didn't mention gay men or lesbians when he said, well, all Ohioans should have the rights respect.
Amazing. Amazing. Well, I'm really proud of your family members standing behind, you know, you and Sholene and just pointing out the insanity of this guy who's...
Well, it's gotten quite a reaction, that open letter, and a lot of people have said they have a lot of guts, so I'm proud of them.
Yeah, I agree. I salute them and you as well. So what else is going on in the news?
Some other issues. A big drop in gas prices, the lowest since 2008. course, some of that could be because there wasn't much gas available in New York, but also lower crude prices and 20 cents in the last 2 weeks. So that's very good news. Also today, a couple of Article 32s, which are court-martials. One, Sergeant Bayless, who is accused of killing some Afghani, he is court-martial in, or is a court in Washington State. But another one, General Jeffrey Sinclair, also an Army general, he is accused of having sexual contact and also inappropriately using alcohol with four subordinates and the civilian. I believe it also took place in Afghanistan, but not in the same kind of way. And that trial also began in Fort Bragg, a general, very unusual.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. Usually they kind of look out for their own.
There is a lot of questions about voter suppression in Ohio. As you know, the Supreme Court was involved in whether early voting would be allowed. And there is a lot of voting in Ohio, and the question about voter ID and who records the complaint ID, whether it's actually the person at the polling, whether it's the voter themselves, a lot of this question is coming up. Now, speaking of not suppression but voter issues, I really don't know how some of these people in Queens, my co-publisher, is her house and everybody else's house around her is in total wreck. They haven't even been told what if polling places are open tomorrow or how they're going to get there, since there's certainly no transportation in that neck of the woods. Most people's cars have died because of the water, the salt water, et cetera. So not a very good situation in terms of that. But Ohio is a major question, and is, of course, you don't need to be told by me about the voter lines, et cetera, in Florida.
Yeah, I see these lines as simple, naked voter suppression. I have never in my life, had to wait more than 15 minutes to vote. Until this weekend, I had to wait 25 minutes, almost 30 minutes to vote, and that's it. But I've never lived in a swing state in a largely Democratic area. Why is it only the swing states and only the largely Democratic areas where you have to wait 6 hours to vote? This is a national disgrace.
I'm going up to New York State in the very wee hours of the morning to vote. And I'm told that they never have any, you know, there's no line.
What's the longest you've ever had to wait in your life, Ellen?
About 15 minutes in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, there you go. And I keep asking people these questions, and people who have lived in affluent areas, in largely white areas, or not in swing states or in rural areas, and the answer is always 5, 10, 15 minutes to vote. You ask somebody who lives in a swing state, in Ohio, in Florida, and in double whammy in a Democratic area, 5 hours, 6 hours, 10 hours, 12 hours. This is intentional. This is voter suppression.
100%, and there's going to be a lot of legal cases on that. Paul Ryan, who is running for vice president, as you well know, with Mr. Romney, with Governor Romney, had a phone call with the Faith and Freedom Coalition. He talked about Judeo-Christian values being at stake here. The traditions of Western civilization being at stake in this election. So I guess President Obama does not have Judeo-Christian values.
No, he's a secret Muslim, you know. Ellen Radner, thank you.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Boy, it's been an interesting day. I'm wondering how many people in their 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s have had the experience of having to wait more than 15 or 20 minutes to vote, other than people who live in largely Democratic districts in swing states. I voted on Saturday. I waited 32 minutes. We timed it. It's the longest I've ever waited to vote in my life. I don't think I've ever had to wait more than 10 minutes in my life. Ellen Radner was on this program. She's the same age I am. She said she's never had to wait more than 10 minutes to vote in her life. Let's check around. John Nichols is on the line with us, Washington correspondent for The Nation magazine, the author of the new book, Uprising. And you can read his writings, of course, at thenation.com. John, welcome back to the program.
It's great. Great to be on with you, Tom.
How long?
I will report that I had to wait an hour and 15 minutes in Madison, Wisconsin.
Wow. Now, that was an election
that was Friday.
And that was an election that is controlled by Republicans, and you were in a largely Democratic area?
Dane County, I have to say, it's a pretty efficient place, and I don't want to put blame so much. I don't want to blame specific people. Here's what I'll say is the problem in a state like Wisconsin. We have not, as a nation, made the minimal commitment to having easy, functional voting.
Right. Voting as a right, not a privilege.
All kinds of places in our country, even places that try to do a good job. But because we haven't made that commitment in places where there are folks who don't really want certain kind of people to vote, they have a real ability to slow the process down. And, Tom, this is what I would emphasize. To my view, we spent an immense amount of time talking about formal voter suppression, things like voter ID laws and what you do with early voting and registration and things of that nature, the things that we see on paper as formal things. What we don't note is the most profound voter suppression, and that is simply local officials who slow things down by not having enough equipment, by not having the proper hours. And where we've seen that writ large in recent days is in Ohio, which is probably the central battleground state, and in Florida, which is a state that, frankly, if they ran their elections well, it's probably likely Democrats would usually win. In Florida, Tom, yesterday and Saturday, some people were waiting 9 hours. I want to emphasize that. 9 hours.
You can't call that anything other than voter suppression, John. That should be a crime.
It's the deepest voter suppression. And here's the fascinating thing. This is how bad it's gotten, Tom. In the past, Jeb Bush, and I don't hold Jeb Bush up as an exemplar of American small-d democratic activism, but Jeb Bush used to extend early voting in highly competitive elections. That's just what he did.
Right.
This year, Rick Scott, his replacement as governor of Florida, refused to extend early voting. And so as a result, local officials across Florida, as well as the Democratic Party there, have had to cobble together a late-stage early voting system that allowed people to do in-person absentee votes and other things. And it has been so haphazard, such a mess, because at the top level, the governor erected barriers that you actually ended up in situations like what we saw in Doral, I think it's Doral, Florida, in Miami-Dade County, where they announced that a polling place was open in a suburban area. But when a lot of, frankly, people of color and white working class people showed up to vote, they locked the doors because it didn't look like the right kind of people had showed up.
Right.
It's unbelievable. I mean, this is...
Well, and this is the point that I was making about my experience. I went through all the places I've lived in my life, and I've always lived in areas that were largely white and largely affluent or very rural, you know, Vermont and New Hampshire.
Yeah.
And in Portland, of course, we voted by mail, so there was no delay whatsoever. And never having lived in a swing state and never having lived in a big... I mean, I live in Washington, D.C. right now. It's the first time I've ever in my life lived in a big city. And I had to wait 32 minutes to vote. But I guarantee you, if Washington, D.C. was a swing state, that 32-minute wait to vote, because probably about 60% of the people around me were African-American, and most of the Caucasians around me, most of the white people around me, were probably voting Democratic, knowing the neighborhood where I live, that would have been a 6 or 8 hour wait. I mean, this is the way that they do voter suppression in its most naked form. And why is this not called voter suppression when the CBS or NBC or ABC Evening News says, all right, here, look at the lines here. 12 hours people are waiting to vote. I mean, why didn't they call that voter suppression in 2004 when people stood in line for 10 hours to vote for John Kerry?
Because that's the point at which we'd start to admit that we have a largely dysfunctional election system in America.
Well, I mean, you know, what's the old Alcoholics Anonymous thing? You first you realize you've got a problem, and then you do something about it. I mean, can't we look at this and say, hey, this is a problem?
Well, this is how bad it is. There's a group called the OSCE. It's the it's a international monitoring group that has monitored elections in just about every country around the world, including the United States in the past. They are going to be on the ground with some 50-plus observers tomorrow in states across the country. But they were told by officials in one of the big battleground states, Iowa, as well as another not so much
as well as Texas, yeah,
that if they got near the polling places, they'd be arrested.
Right.
So we're actually saying we have officials in America threatening to arrest international observers. Why? Right. You know, it's no mystery here, Tom.
And
there are people who are very happy with our dysfunctional system.
Sure. Yeah, it's the old Paul Weyrich thing. You know, I'm sure you've heard me play that clip so many times.
Yeah,
so I'm not going to inflict it on you again. I played it twice yesterday, so my listeners are familiar with it. But, you know, frankly, our leverage in the election goes up as the voting populace goes down. And, you know, I've been playing that clip actually for 8 years
on
this program.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
Tom,
Tom,
this is the point. You talk about it because you're a structuralist. I'm a structuralist, too. And that may make us seem a little boring some days.
We look at the systems.
The matter is, we talk about how the real structure works. And the fact is, that's what affects things. As much as money, as much as personalities, as much as ideas and issues. If somebody controls the structure and they can game it, even minimally, in their favor, that can define everything.
Right. And that may well be what's happening. You said earlier, we're talking with John Nichols, TheNation.com, and the author of the book Uprising. You mentioned earlier that Florida, if they had an actual clean, open, and easily available voting system, would probably be a blue state, a Democratic state. Expand on that.
Well, I wrote a book after the 2000 election. I spent months looking at all the details of the meltdown in 2000 in the Bush v. Gore race.
Right.
And one of the things that I love about writing a book, and I know you do as well, is that you learn things. You don't just go in knowing everything. What I learned is this. Florida in 2000, roughly 3%, 3 to 4% of the electorate, people who came with the intention of casting a vote, were denied the right to do so, either by discarding of ballots, by being purged off lists, by being turned away at polling places. And when you add that up, when you add that you know, discard level up, and you look at where it came, and I actually went down to the counties, looked proportionally where these people were. They were from the most overwhelmingly Democratic counties. They tended to be overwhelmingly people of color. And these are, you know, these are likely Democratic voters.
This is vote shaving. This is point shaving.
And so it's a very simple thing that when you have a system that makes it hard, that actually erects barriers to a substantial portion of the electorate on one side, you create an unnatural, an unfair advantage for the other side.
Right. And I would bet just about anything that in the white suburbs of, you know, the wealthy white suburbs of name the city in Florida, that the average wait to vote is 10 minutes. It certainly was when I lived in Atlanta, I can tell you that. John Nichols, thanks so much for being with us, John.
Thanks for covering this issue.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is incredible. This is voter suppression. There's no other way to describe this. It is a crime against democracy. It's been going on for quite a while. You know, William Rehnquist, the former Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court, got famous in Republican circles by standing outside Native American and Hispanic voting places outside of Phoenix, Arizona, with his 6'2" height and size, and challenging voters. You know, are you sure you can vote? Well, I'm not sure, senor. Well, then leave. You know, that kind of thing. Anyhow, Marcus in Franklin, Wisconsin. Hey, Marcus, what's on your mind?
Actually, I'm in South Carolina. Hold on one sec. I'm getting a truck loaded.
Oh, okay. You've got a Wisconsin phone number or zip code or something.
Yeah, it's actually can you hear me?
Yeah, just fine.
All right, I had to take it off speakerphone. I'm a conservative, but I guess I'm like what you said that one day, which got me looking into stuff, a 1954-56 Republican platform conservative where they care about people and do the things like Frances Perkins did when she wrote up the Social Security Act. Thank you for giving me all this. I was even carrying around a constitution in my truck, and and get chewed out by other Republicans calling me a doggone liberal. And I just can't believe you give them sources, dates, and times, and names, and facts, and they'll turn around and just wave their hand and, oh, I don't want to hear it.
Right.
Well, I wanted to say that the way I look up, you know, the truth is I put my preconceived notions aside. I look not for what I want to hear, and that's easier said than done.
Oh, yeah.
I look for the truth. And if you find that the truth's what you want to hear, great. But if you don't, you got a choice to make. You either turn around and accept the truth and adjust your attitude like I have done, which I get chewed out for all the time, but, or you go ahead and wave your hand and just live a lie and just ignore it.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not going to live a lie like that. So what I wanted to ask you, this really concerns me about these, you know, I'm down in South Carolina right now fixing to go back to Milwaukee with a load of steel cables.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's what you hear in the background. They're loading me right now.
Yeah.
Why can't somebody like the FBI grab two of these machines, you know, if they have to do it after the election? Whatever, but grab two of these machines, put a set number of votes, like 2,000-3,000 on each side in them, and then, you know, have somebody down there waiting so they don't reprogram the machine again that counts them,
right.
And then run them through and see what the heck happened, man.
Right. Well, there's two reasons why the FBI can't do that. First of all, there is no federal right to vote. In Bush v. Gore, one of the arguments that was made by, and this was a lawsuit that George Bush brought against the Al Gore campaign, to stop the recount in Florida, because if you read Bush v. Gore, it's a very enlightening read. It's a short Supreme Court decision. The Bush campaign claimed that if every vote was counted in Florida, as the Florida Supreme Court had ordered and as they were doing, then it would irreparably harm, that was their phrase, irreparably harm George W. Bush. And so the Gore people came in and said, you can't stop a state from counting the vote. People have a right to vote, and they have a right to have their vote counted. And in Bush v. Gore, they explicitly say there is no constitutional right to vote. So because there's no federal law, there's no federal constitutional right to vote, the FBI has no jurisdiction or authority, number one. So it would have to be state officials. And the state officials, I mean, you know, in Florida, you got a Republican governor and a Republican secretary of state. He's running the elections. He's responsible for people having to stand in line for 10 and 12 hours. He's responsible for throwing 50,000-60,000 African Americans off the voting rolls because they want to, you know, shave a few points. So, you know, it's not going to be much help. So that, you know, there's that part of it, that we need an affirmative right to vote. And then secondly, the copyright laws and the patent protections in the United States have been interpreted by the Supreme Court in such a draconian fashion that these companies could say that if the FBI took their machine and tried to look into the software, that would be a violation of their constitutional rights as a person to trade secrecy, to privacy. The right of a business to operate in secret has been interpreted basically as a Fourth Amendment human right. Now that the Supreme Court has said the corporations are persons. And so Diebold and ES&S and Hart InterCivic, which is in part owned by Mitt Romney's son, and all these other voting machine companies, they could very easily say to state officials who might want to look inside their machines, sorry, you can't do it. It's proprietary. That magic word proprietary means you can't look into it. So that's what's going on. Marcus, I got to run. Thanks a lot for the call. Great to have you with us. What line? 11's not available to me. Just punch her up. No, I can't. No, I don't. You got to. There we go. There's line 11. Carole King on the line. Carole King, the musician, singer, songwriter. Welcome to our program.
Well, thank you so much. And where are you broadcasting from?
We are broadcasting live from Washington, D.C., although we are live on the air from coast to coast on commercial radio stations, on Pacifica non-commercial radio stations, on Sirius XM, on Dish Network, on DirecTV. We're all over the place.
Well, fantastic. No, I just wanted to know where you were and how you fared in the storm.
Oh, we made it. We made it through fine. And you?
Well, I was in New York, and I was in the uptown part of the borough, the northern part of the borough, so I had power, and so many of my friends who live in the cooler part of the borough, they like to think, didn't have power.
Oh, my. Yeah, that's got to be a tough one, and it's going to be a really tough one for people who are trying to vote, too. So you are speaking out on behalf of the Obama campaign. Do I have that right?
I am. You are correct. I am my you know, I was going to say my primary message, but I'm not going to say that. Cross that out.
Well, let's get to it. We just have a minute or so here, so I'm sorry.
Yes. My message is just to say to people, get out and vote. It is so important. If you're if you don't have a choice, if you have to work or you can't get care for your child, I mean, even bring your child, but please, it is so, so important to vote, and I, you know, I want everybody to get out and vote and bring a friend and go to vote.barackobama.com, find out where your polling place is and any other information, and, you know, get a little deeper in the quick sound bites and make up your mind with a little forethought. Take the time and trouble, and I am an advocate for Barack Obama, but I encourage everybody to get out and vote.
There you go. Carole King, it's an honor to talk with you. I love your music. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me on the show.
It is a pleasure. Thank you. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We'll be right back. 27 minutes past the hour.
So it's one more round for experience, and I'm on the road again, and it's going to take some time, this time.
That's Carole King, who was just on our show. How sweet is that? Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and Mike in San Marcos, California. Hey, Mike, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom, thanks for taking my call. First, I got to tell you, I'm a staunch conservative, but I do listen to you. I think very intellectual and fair on your topics. The thing about the voter suppression, at least in Ohio anyway, the reason why you have such long lines is the fact that the legislature determined that there's only one early polling place per county. So tomorrow, I guarantee every citizen will be able to vote within 15 minutes because there'll be one in their neighborhood.
I beg your pardon?
In Ohio,
you think everybody in Ohio is going to be able to vote within 15 minutes on Tuesday?
Well, if they go to their polling place in their neighborhood, sure. You can't have one county trying to get in the door of one single building.
Okay. Mike, call back tomorrow. Let's find out what's going on, okay? I suspect that a Republican legislature in Ohio is not going to make that happen. But, you know, I hope you're right. Thanks a lot for the call. Melanie in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Melanie, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Can you hear me?
I hear you just fine. Am I sounding a little faint? Is that why you ask?
Yeah, I'm on my car Bluetooth. I'm sorry.
Ah, okay. That's fine. What's up?
Yes. Yeah. So I just wanted to call you and let you know what's going on in our state. On Friday we had, I guess it was a temporary election employee busted for tampering with ballots.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you'd heard about that yet or not.
This is the person who was filling out ballots that hadn't been completely filled out, filling in all the unfilled in parts with the Republican candidates.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. So yeah. Our Secretary of State has sent in some investigators, and our Department of Justice is doing some looking into criminal investigation here too.
Yeah, and this is, you know, but let me say for the record, Melanie, I saw that story yesterday. We talked about it very, very briefly. A lot of folks in the chat room were all over it. But here's why I don't think that that's as big a story as the fact that people have to wait in line for 10 hours to vote in Ohio or in Florida. That's one overzealous person committing a crime for which she will probably be prosecuted. That's the kind of thing that just happens. You know, it's to use my shoplifting analogy, most people don't walk into a 7-Eleven and walk out with a candy bar stuffed in their pants, you know. But a very, very small percentage of people do, and very often they get caught. You can't design a system that is completely a shopping system that's shoplifter-proof, just like you can't design an electoral system that is, impossible for a single person to mess with in some small way. But what she did was a small crime. I think that, on the other hand, when you look at the governor of the state of Florida saying, no, we're going to restrict early voting and we're going to limit the number of voting machines in the areas that are heavily Democratic so that people have to wait in line 6, 8, 10, 12 hours, you know, elderly people, disabled people, people who are you know, who have to be within a half hour of a bathroom, people who have a hard time getting out. In Ohio, it's getting really cold, and you know, it's, back in 2004, it was raining, you know. People stood in the rain for 6, 8, 10 hours. That is naked voter suppression. That is, that in my opinion, that is a far worse crime than what this woman did up in Clackamas County. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I totally agree.
Okay.
Yeah, and the fact that we can't pin these people down that are, you know, they all should be criminally prosecuted.
I absolutely agree. And if we had a law that said that there was a federal right to vote, then you would have a federal, you know, you would have a federal law that had been violated. Unfortunately, we don't. Instead, we have a law that says the private corporations can keep their voting machine software from the public, you know, under secrecy of trade protection. So, Melanie, thank you for the call. And thanks for bringing that up. It is an important story. I just think that the most important story is we should all, when you see a long line on TV and you do not hear the news reporter identifying that as voter suppression, call that reporter, call that news agency, call that network, call that station and say, why is it that I'm seeing a line where people are standing in line for 10 hours to vote and it's being identified as enthusiasm, or it's being defined as voters actually care about voting, rather than being identified as what it really is, which is voter suppression? Nadia in South Elgin, Illinois. Hey, Nadia, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how are you?
Fine, thank you. What's on your mind?
Good. You are my inspiration. You said, go get active, and I did. I'm a candidate for Kane County Board.
Oh, good on you.
Thank you. I'm calling regarding the topic that you're discussing. Last night, somebody stole my Obama sign, and it throughout Kane County, that's been happening for a couple months now.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel that's an attack on my freedom of speech.
I agree.
So what I did was I tripled the size of the sign.
Ha! There you go. Good on you. Good on you.
So that's my response.
I think that's the point at which I'd go out and get one of those electric fence chargers.
I was looking for that.
It's like, yeah.
They could
have their value, I suppose. Although I'll tell you, when I was 7 years old and my cousin, who's 2 years older, convinced me I should pee on one, to this day, I remember it, which is probably why it popped into my mind. Nadia, thank you for the call, and good on you for running for the Kane County Board. That is marvelous. Kirk in, poor Shane, he's hysterical. He's fallen off his chair. Kirk in Bothell, Washington. Hey, Kirk, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I had a friend as a boy who also had the same electric fence experience, and it's something that really,
it's what happens to, I think, every kid from the city. I mean, here I was from, you know, this kid from Lansing, you know, from the city, and I showed up in Newego, you know, this little town up in northern Michigan, and my cousin was like, oh, yeah. You ever seen an electric fence? No, what's that? Oh, well, just try and pee on it. It's great fun. Anyhow, what's up, Kirk?
My poor little sister was crawling under another one day and had her tongue out, and that was another really unfortunate incident.
Ouch.
So I'm doubly scarred. But I had a policy or a strategy question that might lead to a solution to this problem, and then a quick comment, if you'd allow. The strategy question is there any budgetary component of voting at the federal level or counting votes where in Obama's second term, he could do a reconciliation process to get some relief and some change for us?
By reconciliation, you're talking about the congressional process where you submit something as a budget item and it has a 10-year lifespan and it can't be filibustered. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
Okay.
Get it through the Senate.
Right, that's true in the Senate. There's no need for the equivalent in the House because you can't filibuster in the House. Although the leadership does control the agenda, so they can simply prevent things from coming to the floor. Kirk, my guess is, and I may be wrong on this, but my guess is that if President Obama holds the White House, the Republicans can hold the House, and Harry Reid and the Democrats hold the Senate, that Harry Reid will change the Senate rules and either do away with or so dramatically weaken as to effectively do away with the filibuster. I hope I'm right on that. I hope that I heard or understood Senator Reid's comments to that effect correctly. I may be wrong, but, you know, we'll see. I mean, reconciliation has been used for a lot of things. The Bush tax cuts were passed by reconciliation. Obamacare, a large chunk of Obamacare was passed by reconciliation. And, you know, usually something passed by reconciliation, 10 years later you come back, and if it's a bad law, you know, you just let it expire. If it's worked out well, you turn it into law. So,
well, I would say that it'd be inexcusable for Senator Reid not to change the rules. After
yeah,
what we've
I agree. I've been yelling, you know, on the air at poor Harry for you know, the better part of the last 6 years, or the last 3 years, 2.5 years, ever since Scott Brown got sworn in and they lost their filibuster-proof majority, which they held only for 2 months and 1 day, contrary to all the stories you'll hear from all the right wingers. Kirk, thank you for the call. Well said. Stuart in Seattle. Hey, Stuart, what's up?
Yeah, I was really irritated this morning when I saw an ad from the local King County Seattle Washington Elections Board itself telling us how we should or shouldn't vote. The ad said we shouldn't do write-in votes. They targeted the Mickey Mouse votes, but it was basically telling us not to do write-ins. But this was right after they denied the victories of two write-in candidates who technically won one of the two slots on the printed November ballots in our top two primary system by both being one of the top two vote-getters and getting over a threshold of 1% of the vote. But they did it running write-in candidacies, so they were left off of the printed ballots in November.
Wow. Stuart, I'm sorry I can't address that. I'm not familiar with the local issue there in Seattle and how it's working, but it sounds like a mess. We should dig into that a little more deeper after the election. Chris in Pueblo, Colorado, got a minute to the break. Quick one.
Yeah, Tom, I just wanted to let you and your viewers know about a group called True the Vote. I don't know if you're aware.
Yes, this
of them.
Is that right-wing group that says that they're going to have a million people out to trying to intimidate voters.
Yes. And
actually, they don't say intimidate voters, but that's my interpretation of the effect of what they're going to try and do.
Yeah, exactly. And I was just going to ask a quick question of whether what are the options people have to combat this group?
Well, you can volunteer as a poll watcher, too. Contact your local Democratic Party and ask them what they're doing. Go to vote.barackobama.com was Carol King's suggestion, a website that I did not know existed. I'm going to have to check out and see what's going on. But, you know, you can participate, too. So I would do that. Chris, thanks a lot for the call. 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Vote.BarackObama.com is that website. We'll be right back.
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes
yeah.
of the gay, democracy is coming.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And those of you watching us on TV, you can see the picture of the Capitol there. It's daylight savings time is gone and now, or has it come? I forget which it is. Whatever it is, it's now dark outside. Christina Tobin is on the line with us. She is the founder and chairperson of the Free and Equal Elections Foundation and co-moderator with me on tonight's third-party debate on RT America and Free Speech TV. Christina, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me on board. I'm just really happy that we'll both be moderating this debate tonight. That's pretty cool.
It should be a lot of fun. So tell me about the Free and Equal Elections Foundation, first of all.
Sure. We're a nonprofit organization, a true grassroots group that's here to unite people from the left, the right, across the spectrum to reform the electoral system throughout the United States. And we've got a long-term plan for that, Tom. So we're going to start with this debate that we're having tonight and look forward to working with you down the road to shake up the system and get those independents in office and knock out the D's and R's controlled by private interest money.
So, well, actually, you know, there's some L's and some G's that are controlled by private interest money as well. I mean, that's a larger systemic issue. But what is your long-term plan?
Well, you know, parties don't work. The origins of the Constitution doesn't even mention parties. So I foresee independents, individuals running for office in 14, and we're going to provide that national database to list every single candidate running for office and candidates that will be against ballot access barriers, for opening the debates, addressing voter fraud, for instant runoff voting, and, well, you know, not really big fans of private interest money in politics. So it's going to be a great year in 2013, and that's what we need to do to, get America back in the direction that we want to be in. You know, no NDAA, no SOFA, no Patriot Act.
Sure.
Those sort of things.
Sure. Yeah. And these are things that I think people across the political spectrum agree on. Christina, we're talking with Christina Tobin of the Free and Equal Foundation, Elections Foundation. Freeandequal.org is their website. Christina, do you have any idea or any sense of what percentage of Americans would know what you or I were talking about if we were to mention instant runoff voting, ranked voting, or proportional representation?
Well, a lot more. As of a couple of weeks ago, I was privileged to meet you there. Thank you for being one of our correspondents when we held the debate in Chicago, moderated by Larry King. And what we did was a vote there, for example, through instant runoff voting. And we had four candidates then, and now we have two candidates who have proceeded to the final debate, Jill Stein with the Green Party and Gary Johnson with the Libertarian Party. And the people voted through instant runoff voting. And it's a very wonderful
thing. On your website.
Yeah, on our website, we had well over 50,000 people, but millions of people, if not more, viewed that debate. And we were top 10 trending on Twitter for 24 hours. I couldn't believe it. I mean, and my jaw hit the ground when I heard that after the debate. So it was really neat moderating that with Larry King, but I think it's going to be really neat moderating with you as well.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. As I said, I'm looking forward to it too. Ralph Nader's been on this program a number of times. Chris Hedges, others who are, very, very strong critics of the duopoly. You said a minute ago, if I understood it correctly, that you're an opponent of political parties, period?
Yeah, parties don't work. I've seen it even within, with all due respect, Green Party, Libertarian Party. I really see Gary Johnson and Jill Stein as individuals. There's a disconnect between the campaigns. I've learned first and foremost, dealing with these campaigns and confirming them for the debates. But, parties, as they become larger, whether you're Libertarian, Green, Democrat, Republican, and there's always a bad seat or two or more at the top, and they stop listening to their member base.
How do you deal with that very human nature thing of, that I think came out of family and tribe of people wanting to get together with like-minded people and say, hey, we are... let's put a name on it. You know, we are this tribe. We are the Democratic tribe. We are the Libertarian tribe. We are the, isn't that human nature?
No, I mean, I think social networking and technology is going to be such a valuable tool because with the national database we'll be launching, people will see each candidate as individual. So, there could be 13 people running for office, and we'll give them that free and equal platform to do the debates at local levels and so on, state, federal, local, whatever, so be it. But no, I really do foresee us shifting back to the origins of the Constitution. I know earlier this year, Ralph Nader and Ron Paul, they both endorsed free and equal elections. They were on an interview with Judge Napolitano with Freedom Watch of the Ground, and they talked about uniting against the establishment. Both candidates, Ron Paul, Ralph Nader, they want to end the Federal Reserve. They say no to the Patriot Act, no to SOPA, NDAA. And we all recognize it's that money in politics and money in media as well that has, we have the problems we have in America today and right. Worldwide for that matter.
Right. Although in the United States, it's particularly exacerbated by the current makeup of our U.S. Supreme Court, which, with the Buckley decision said money is speech. And then with the Boston versus Bilotti decision said corporations are people. And then they brought it together in Citizens United and validated. Put a huge stamp of approval on both of those doctrines.
You mean the people in the Supreme Court who are appointed by the Democrats and Republicans? I mean,
they're appointed by the president.
Squad.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, yes. I mean, the actual people in the judicial system, that is, overall.
Right.
And then the impact through the Supreme Court, of course. But, again, all appointed by money and politics, these and ours.
Yep.
And a lot of really big, powerful people at the top is, where all.
So if we
to.
So if we got the if we depoliticized our small d democracy or small r republic, you're suggesting that we might have statesmen and women as politicians rather than politicians, and that they might nominate people for the Supreme Court who are actually, genuine, serious patriots and good judges.
Exactly.
Yeah, very interesting.
Check out more at freeandequal.org.
There you go.
Freeandequal.org.
Yep, freeandequal.org. Christina Tobin, the founder and chairperson of Free and Equal Election Foundations. You can watch us tonight on RT TV and on Free Speech TV, freespeech.org, rt.com, and freeandequal.org, right?
Yeah, 8 p.m. Eastern is when the correspondents kick off.
There you go. 8 p.m. Eastern for the correspondents discussion, 9 p.m. from 9 to 10:30 for the debate between Jill Stein and Gary Johnson. Thank you, Christina.
See you soon, Tom.
Great talking with you. Election Day 2012. It all comes down to the votes. We'll be keeping a close watch tomorrow on the latest election and voting news. Where did you vote? What was your experience like? Call in and let us know. And don't forget, democracy begins when you show up. Participate.
For audio and video archives, go to TomHartmann.com.